This is a download from BFM 89.9, the business station.
Hi, I'm Ahmad Fuad Rahmat.
I'm Vizla Kumaresan.
Welcome, everybody, to Digital Desires, a show where we look into how new communication technologies, digital media, social media are changing human interactions. And today, we're going to talk about how to survive or cope or recover from surviving trolls. Now, people tend to think of trolls as frivolous, as playful, but we rarely pay attention to the damages they do. And joining us to do that with us today is, first and foremost, human rights lawyer and activist Fadiana Dua Fikri. Welcome to the show.
Thank you.
We're also joined also as well by my colleague from Project Dialogue, also a feminist personality in her own right, Mariam Lee.
Hi, thank you.
So maybe just to start off our discussion, you can start by sharing some of your own experiences in confronting and dealing with online trolls so that our audience can have an idea of what you've been through.
Yeah, maybe we start with you, Mariam.
It starts when you are visible, first and foremost. And it's not just being visible, but also what are you visible for? So when you are visible for being feminist, for example, and that's not a very, looked very
it's not
nicely.
It's a very favorable sort of position to take.
Exactly. And it makes you very unpopular. And when you make certain unpopular stances when you gain attention for that, you also gain the attention from the trolls because of that. So the kind of online bullying, I would say, would come in the form of repeated and just non-stop harassment on your timeline, and they send you messages you never even asked for. And when you don't reply, actually they keep sending you.
Right. Mm.
They actually expect you to reply to them. Mm. And most of the time, actually, I just, instead of replying to them, I reply to people who support me instead. Yeah. So that they can see that, that I do know I am watching you, but I refuse to engage you.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. And what about you, Fadia?
I started using Twitter back in 2011. At that time, I was practicing law, representing people in human rights cases. I remember this one case, a very controversial case of Hamza al-Kashgari. He was a Saudi blogger who tweeted something about the Prophet, and then he came to Malaysia to seek asylum, and he was detained incommunicado, and we tried to communicate with him, tried to have access to him. A lot of things happened, and I tweeted about it, this
yeah,
guy.
Yeah, I remember this case, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and then, the amount of abuse that I got was really stunning. Mm. I also got tweets by a very prominent religious leader saying that how could you represent someone who who's blasphemous? Mm. You are a Muslim. How could you do this? Mm. And then I tweeted back, saying that whatever that he has done, he has every right to a fair trial and so on and so forth. I remember 6 tweets. I replied to this guy and he didn't reply to my tweet. So I was really angry all the time. If I'm on Twitter or Facebook talking about controversial issues, I would always find myself angry.
Okay.
And it's always more damaging when someone really famous bashes you.
Yeah. Especially from a position of power, right?
Exactly.
As religious authorities. Yeah.
And also how women would always be the target because violence and harassment.
Yes.
I think violence is gendered.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I was going to ask that question. If you think there is a difference, or if your gender makes a difference in the kind of a harassment you receive.
Definitely. There's no question.
And Mariam, I know that you've gotten death threats.
Yeah. Also rape threats.
Rape threats.
And then there will be these very, few trolls who would be the same person again and again, tweeting you the same thing every time you say something.
Yes. And I've also seen many of the tweets that attack you personally. They attack the way you look, attack the clothes you wear, attack the, it becomes very personal as
well.
Exactly. Yes, yeah. And Fadia, do you think there's a difference in how women tweet at you versus how men tweet at you?
Of course. Okay. Men would always start with perempuan bodoh, you know, perempuan tak guna, things like this.
And women?
It's always referring to my gender.
Okay.
Yeah, and women sometimes, oh, how can you say something like this? How can you talk about feminism? You're a woman. It's always, I think the guilt tripping is there.
Right.
Mm. Yeah.
Yeah, definitely different. But the thing is, when women put down other women, it gives license to the men to do even worse. And most of the time when women themselves personally attack other women on Twitter, what I see is that the backlash that comes from men are 10 times because they see this woman as, you know, the bullying of this one woman as endorsing the bullying even more. I don't really understand the thought process that goes into that, really, to be honest, but that's just what happens.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
So maybe that what patriarchy is.
Well,
yeah, okay, validation from the masses, right?
Yes.
Can you just explain to us the emotional transformation that happens, especially at the point when it gets overwhelming, right? Because the problem is people tend to think of these things as just trolls that are ultimately harmless. It's all in the screen. It doesn't affect your real life. Chill. You know, I've heard that a lot. Come on, it's just Twitter, man. Relax, you know. But the reality is that it actually creeps into our psyche in very, very dangerous ways, right? Because at a certain point, it's not just one or two people that we're disagreeing with, is a whole mob that is like amassing online and really like crowding into your own sense of boundaries. So can you explain that process, like when it becomes, when, you know, something supposedly, you know, how they would just say that it's just criticism becomes bullying? Yeah.
I think language matters. Sexist, misogynistic, violent language is violence. I think we have to acknowledge that part, because people, when they hear this type of language, they would feel like it's something that's normalized, for example, to hurl abuses at people. So people always say that, oh, it's just words, but words have huge implications on people's lives. So yeah, when people say something sexist, something misogynistic, something's racist, for example, I mean, it will affect people. People who are saying it, people who have to live with that reality. So I think we have to deal with it as a form of violence, and it has to stop.
And also, other than language, numbers matter. So two things here when it comes to numbers. It's either one person giving you hell repeatedly, and even when after you ask him, usually it's a him, to stop, he wouldn't stop.
Yeah.
Like, for example, I have this one specific troller who every time something that he disagrees, you know, with me, it doesn't even have to do with something that he disagrees, just something that people just don't like on my, you know, he would tweet the same thing, mati je lah, you know. And I have so far collected, I think, about 12 of these, the same thing, for different reasons, for different tweets. And
do you think it's just because he lacks imagination and creativity?
No. It's just basically just trolls. They use they repeatedly abuse you. That's the key aspect of it. And also the numbers in terms of how many people actually do, you know, go on a mob on you. And when the thing really like go viral, sometimes both happens at the same time. That means like there will be a lot of people repeating the same thing to you, the same abuse to you, again and again and again.
Yeah. And again, this is where we see the blurring of norms in both the real world and in the online world. Because in the real world, if someone called you names, if someone made threats at you, it's very clearly abuse. But then when it happens in this online sphere, You all of a sudden you've got these evidence of these 12 tweets. Well, what can you do with it?
Exactly. I don't know.
Right? Who do you go and report it to?
Yeah.
What is the actual crime? You know, was there an actual intention? It becomes so blur, and it gives people license to continue doing that.
That's true.
Yeah.
And also, if let's say you get death threats or rape threats, you can't really go to the police because they will say that, oh, it's something that people say online. And you see how rape culture is very pervasive in
online,
every
online,
society. Online, I mean, people treat it as something, oh, you know, it's not important.
And there's also this subtle kind of trolling. Hmm. Like, they are usually disguised as good advice. You know,
very
this
patronizing.
Give us an example.
Yeah. Very patronizing and condescending. Or is it, and to, you know, they tell you to chill and relax and don't think too much of it. I'm like, oh my God, you have no idea.
Yeah, I noticed that too. Like, when there's this torrent of insults and abuse, suddenly somebody will say, sekadar nasihat. Or renong-renong
kan lah. It's always easy to invoke that, sekadar nasihat. You know?
And also that there is no right way of responding, because you get attacked for being a feminist, and then when you respond, you're like, oh my God, you're such a sensitive feminist.
You're always angry.
You're always angry, right?
Yeah.
So there's no textbook way of what you can do, because you never know what's the right thing to do.
Exactly.
Right. So on that note, I think it's time for a break. And when we come back, we will resume our conversation with Mariam Lee and Fadia Nadwa Fikri and talk about how to survive this kind of online abuse and trolling. BFM 89.9. BFM 89.9. We're talking today with Mariam Lee and Fadia Nadwa Fikri, two social activists and feminists who have endured their fair share of online trolling and abuse and attacks. So before the break, we had a glimpse of the kinds of interactions, to put it politely, that they've had online based on their political points of view. Fadia, you were attacked for your job, for defending people, a person who was very unpopular.
Mm-hmm.
Mariam, it seems that anything you do just gets this kind of attention. Right. So in the face of all this, what do you do? Mariam, yeah.
So I don't know if Fadia experiences this, but somehow when something major is about to blow up, I can somehow feel it.
Oh,
I don't
really?
Know, it's like an instinct.
It's like your spidey senses.
Yeah, it's something like that. But, you know, sometimes, but you have to speak your truth.
Yeah.
You have to speak it, and you cannot let those fears get to you, and basically you self-censor yourself from speaking what needs to be, you know, said. And when it did turn out the way that my senses expected it to turn out, I was like, oh, here it is again. So I just switch off my phone and, you know, for a few hours, and then come back just to read, you know, all the abuse, but, you know, not take it to heart.
How do you not take it to heart?
It's hard, really.
It's very hard.
Especially if the kinds of attacks are so personal.
Yeah. I'm hardly on Twitter or Facebook these days. That's my strategy for self-care.
Because
it's really, really tough. You know, sometimes you want to speak about something, but you know that, you know, the backlash is going to be unbearable. So sometimes you just decide to just, you know, I'm just going to not say anything.
Oh, right.
But sometimes you can't really control your emotion when you have opinions or you feel so strongly about an issue. Recently, about the Rohingya issue, I was like so angry seeing how people dehumanize the Rohingya refugees, calling names, asking them to be deported, to be killed. And I started tweeting something, and the trolls, like, tweeting at me and all that. Mm. I was really angry. I was shivering. And I just decided to just not look at my Twitter. And I saw you at Quill City Mall.
That's right, yes.
Yes, yeah. I just, like, I deleted the app on my phone so that I wouldn't have to open it. Because it was so emotionally draining.
Yes. Mm-hmm.
And then a few days after that, I started looking at my Twitter. And then they just kept quiet after I tweeted the article.
Actually, there's a good point to note. Opting out is, in a way, quote-unquote, resistance as well, because there's an economy behind this. Facebook likes the shares and the retweets, and they thrive on the scandalous nature of these exchanges and the controversy that it invites, right? Because people are going to screenshot, they're going to see, oh, how can I be a part of this, blah, blah, blah. So engagement is good, but opting out is also an option that we can consider, you know, because sometimes that's what it would take to just have some silence, you know, however briefly, right?
Yeah.
So before getting back into the mire and the mess, just some time for yourself to just, you know, sounds like collecting yourself before re-entering is a good idea.
Yeah, it's,
you know?
It's part of self-care. It's an act of warfare.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah.
It feels like it.
And of course, the way what you've just described, it wasn't just an emotional experience. I mean, you were experiencing physical symptoms as well.
Yeah.
You were shaking.
Yeah, I was like having throbbing headaches, you know, every time I read insulting tweets.
Yeah.
Yeah, in response to my tweet. Yeah. It's like, wow, can't you just ask questions? Can't you just, you know, be polite and be civil and compassionate? It's just
yeah. I mean, there's enough studies, and we cited some studies in the course of our show to show that even as things are, given the normal usage of social media without this, it's already affecting sleep, right?
Yeah.
Because that's the last thing we look at, and the radiation from the screen affects our eyesight. That's the first thing we do when we wake up. Blah, blah. So even when you're using it normally, you're already sleeping badly. So imagine when you actually go through all these things.
Yeah,
you know?
I mean, I can't imagine, Mariam, what it must have been like for you to have death threats and rape threats.
Those come quite rarely, actually. Although, because of the frequency of the abuse happening, so it becomes a lot. Mm. You know, so I mean, out of like 100 trolls, maybe you get like 5 death or rape threats, which is statistically it's not a lot, but still it's pervasive.
I don't know. I think 1 is a lot. One is a lot. Yeah.
But if you talk to, you know, people who are obsessed with numbers, they'll be like 5 out of 100. Yeah. You know. But but I agree with you. Yeah, even 1 is actually bad enough. In the earlier days of being, you know, abused online, and I remember, like, literally not sleeping the whole night, and, like, because I just couldn't sleep. I tried to sleep. And there will be, like, when the whole thing comes to you and you realize that, okay, here we go again, there will be sometimes when it's really bad, you just break down and just cry for, like, a few good hours. And then you just kind of, in that crying, you kind of just want to collect yourself again. So sometimes in those moments of vulnerability is when you kind of like accept things as what it is. And just accept that, you know, you can't change people.
Yeah.
But the conversations that happen because of you know, what you said, or, you know, hopefully would make people think, you know, make people reevaluate their positions before and things like that.
Yeah.
That's what you know, keeps me, you know, hopeful.
Yeah. How do you bring yourself to feel safe enough, though, knowing that they have made these threats against you online, right? And you've, no matter what, right, you never become immune to that. You never get used to that threat, right? And then to meet them face to face, how do you feel safe, Mariam? Or is it possible to feel safe?
I don't meet the trolls, although there are, I have identified a few, you know, individuals, you know, when I would meet them accidentally in, you know, public events and things like that. But usually when they see me, they just walk away. And subsequently, months after that, they would still be abusing me online and things like that. And I just accepted that I cannot escape, no matter what, no matter where I go, no matter how careful I am, I just cannot escape from meeting them, whether I want to or not.
Yeah.
So the best thing I can do is really just show that I'm human, because they dehumanize me all over the place. To let that get to you is just going to be crippling for myself. And I cannot afford to be psychologically crippled.
Or in a way, them avoiding you means that somehow they've let you get to them. And it's really weird, right?
This sort of dynamic. I don't get it either.
Yeah, it's really strange. Is there a silver lining to this in the sense that while you do get a lot of like venom from the trolls, sometimes you find moments of affirmation and support as well, right?
Yeah.
Of course, it's a minority sentiment, because I think the causes you work in tend to only appeal, currently at least, to a minority amount of Malaysians, right?
Yeah.
But in your struggles, I've also come across people who find your courage admirable, they feel that your work is worthwhile, and however small, they feel that they should still voice out and support you. Even, of course, in relation to the bigger monster on web, on the online, it's still a small portion. But do you sense that over time, people are slowly becoming more aware through your interactions?
Yes, you're right about that. And when the abuse were at its peak, right, I would get messages of affirmation and support from a lot of people, actually. I think I underestimate the silent readers or the silent minority. I wouldn't say they're the majority.
Or maybe they're not even on Twitter.
Yeah, like, exactly. Yeah. They're not even. But then when they meet me in person, especially, they would also say, you know, things that would be
affirming
and supportive. And that I realize, you know, these are the people that matter more than the trolls and the bullies. It's not much, like, it's not much in terms of motivation. It's more towards, like, you not destroying yourself. It doesn't motivate, because you are already motivated enough for you to even make the step. But when you realize that you're not in the battle alone, it doesn't destroy you, basically. I mean, at least that's for me.
Because the strategy is to alienate you, right? Exactly. That's what the mob wants to do.
Exactly.
But so getting, knowing that people are supporting, you know, lessens that, right?
What about you, Fadia?
The alienation is very real. I mean, particularly if you're a feminist, for example. I mean, you constantly have to, like, feel or treat it as if you don't belong. So, but at the same time, we're trying to change how people think. I think what is important has to be said. Of course, sometimes it's not easy. That's why self-care would always kick in, you know, whenever you feel like, okay, all right, I'm going to, like, have to, like, take care of myself. Okay, just quit for a while and then come back. And also, I think Twitter, social media, it's not everything. Sometimes I wonder, you know, like people like Angela Davis, Arundhati Roy, they're still alive, you know. They don't have Twitter. Yes. They don't have Facebook. And there was this one interview by Angela Davis. She said, you know, never ever let technology dictate your life. You have to have control over it. So, yeah. So for me, my life is not defined by all this new trends and all that. But at the same time, I'm using it as a medium. But it doesn't define everything that we have out there. So work has to be done on the ground, for example. We have to go out there, talk to people, because at the end of the day, we're trying to conscientize people. Sometimes this, you know, like social media platforms don't really provide that access to you to really talk about things. I mean, the compassion somehow gets missing when you talk to people without looking, you know, at them.
Yes. So what would you say for young women especially who want to speak up, who want to do the kinds of things that you are doing, who do have thoughts and opinions? What would you say to them when they are seeing you on Twitter and seeing the kind of attacks that you get? Fadia?
I would ask them to understand what self-care means. I would also tell them to speak, you know, on things that they feel important. I think it's very important to speak out, to speak up, because the space is very limited, particularly for women, for example, for marginalized groups. You have to use that space that you have, but at the same time, you know that these trolls exist. So you have to have a strategy. If you feel like you want to say something, always, and if you get attacked, always reach out to people who would help you. I mean, there are a lot of organizations, there are a lot of initiatives out there who would support you. Always have a strategy, because this is a warfare. So you have to have a strategy, really.
So to put it very badly, hate is gonna hate. So
shake it off. And it's okay to be affected. You know, you don't have to be like, oh, I'm a hero. I didn't feel anything.
We have to remind ourselves that we are human too. We feel pain, we feel hurt. It's okay to express that.
It's okay.
And just because we feel those things, it doesn't make us any less.
Exactly.
You know, any less feminist or any less activist or any less right in what we think we have to do.
That's true. I think what I would say to these, to the young women who want to speak up, is that the problem is not you. Don't put the blame on you. If people are not listening, it's not your fault. If your message is not, you know, being heard, it's really not on you. Because sometimes you know, you blame yourself for, am I not saying it's right? Am I not, you know, talking it in the right tone and things like that? I mean, no, you know. And I think it's more important for, like, the more mature, aka older women, to, you know, to identify.
You know you're going to get break bats for that.
No ageism. I mean,
no, I mean, my point is, you know, to identify the younger ones and kind of like, even when they don't ask for your help,
to reach out.
Reach out to them. Yeah, exactly. And this is what I do sometimes with the, 19, 18-year-old girls online that are saying things that are quite progressive and they get bashed for it. And then I would just tweet something in support, you know, because people, those trolls need to know and see that this girl, you know, these girls are not alone. Yeah.
Yeah. I think it's a whole discussion in itself, right, in that activism online is a whole other world than real-world activism.
Yes.
And there must be some thought put into the best effective communication strategies, the way of phrasing these things, because so much is happening in that world. That's how Donald Trump got elected,
absolutely,
right? So the conservatives are dominating that space as well. And progressive, so-called liberals, slash the alternative politics scene are trying to use the platform as well. But it's an entire domain that we don't quite know because it's still very new. So I think these discussions on how to manage your online investment, the energy that goes into using and communicating your messages on these platforms is quite important.
To be strategic about it.
Yeah.
Yes, yes.
When to opt out, how long to stay on, should you have certain hours, you know, as a minimum or a maximum online, you know, just so that you can stay intact enough for the longer haul, right?
And these strategies, of course, need to keep changing because we technology, might end up with 280 characters on Twitter. Exactly, and that means more insults. Or these longer ones.
Yeah. Well, that was a very interesting conversation, you know, because a lot of times, Vizsla, we've discussed this in the abstract, you know, and having people who've actually faced the brunt of this was really eye-opening for me personally, you know, because you just feel the depth of what they go through.
Yeah, you know? And I think for, you know, it's, I mean, for me, I suppose I've always had this notion in my mind, but for our listeners, it's a good reminder that, you know, there are humans behind the social media profiles and people feel, right? People get hurt. Yeah. So please, you know, be kind.
Yeah. You know, there's this page on...
There's this old saying, you know, if not, don't have anything nice to say, just don't say anything. I think that's there's value
that's
in that.
That's age-old wisdom. That's why it survived for thousands of
years.
Yes,
yes.
But you know, there's this page online about, like, I can't remember what it's called, but it's a Facebook page called, like, Terrible Parking or something like that. And there are all these Malaysians uploading photos of bad parking. And I'm guilty of that as well, right? I mean, having parking poorly.
Parking badly or putting up pictures?
Both. But sometimes you see, okay, granted, you want this person to know, don't park on the disabled spaces, you know? It's actually like taking up someone else's spot who actually needs it more than you, right? Mm. But the messaging, rather than just being about that simple point, becomes really bad. People are going to really try to destroy that person too, you know? So I think for us on the other side, right, trying to use this platform to communicate our message, we should keep in mind that, look, keep things factual and as to the point as possible without adding insults and, like, you know, indirect jabs, which people are always tempted to do in these platforms, you know, like making everything personal, you know. Like,
yes, and it's always easier to do because online there's so much to hide behind.
Okay. Well, I know you are, we just spoke about your platforms, Twitter platforms. So how can people look up your work or your tweets? What's your handles?
I'm on Twitter at MRYMLER.
Fadia Nadua. Okay. It's there, still there. I'm like constantly thinking maybe I should delete it. Or, I don't know. Still thinking about it.
So look it up while it's still around. Yeah.
Still around.
And you can follow their conversations on those platforms. So look us up on Facebook as well. Type Digital Desires on the search space. You'll find the page there. Or email biggerpicture@bfm.my. Once again, I'm Ahmad Fuad Rahmat alongside Vizsla Kumarisan, joined this week by Mariam Lee and Fadia Nadua Fikri. And this is Digital Desires on BFM 89.9, the business station.
Thank you for listening to this podcast. To find more great interviews, go to bfm.my or find us on iTunes. BFM 89.9, the business station.